It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Aphasia is a language disorder that affects more than a million people in the United States. It's often the result of stroke and can make it difficult for a person to speak clearly, understand spoken language, and read and write. Speech therapy can help patients recover from aphasia, and a new app called Name That from the Apps Lab at the University of Northern Iowa's John Papajohn Entrepreneurial Center can help supplement traditional treatment. The co-developers of the app are here with me today. Angela Berta is a professor in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at UNI. Hello, Angela.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure to be here.
And Stephen Hughes is also here. He's manager of the Apps Lab. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And Angela, I just gave a little bit of a description of what aphasia is. We know it's a language disorder that affects a person's ability to communicate. Can you give me a detailed description of what it is?
Sure. So it usually results from strokes, although there's really any neurological events that can happen. Somebody can have some type of disease process or be in an accident, have some kind of trauma. And it really runs across the gamut, affecting people's ability to understand what is said to them, what they're reading, their ability to speak in a variety of different formats. So Name That, for example, was developed to help with naming, something that we work on regularly in therapy. Their ability to be able to write, to manage their technology. And it can run the gamut from somebody who almost acts as if they might be mute and that they cannot understand anything. Other people, they have relatively pretty decent understanding of people talking to them, what they're hearing, but their speech is really telegraphic. They just get the main words out, but it doesn't sound very pretty or fluid. And other people whose comprehension might be more negatively affected, but speech is very easy for them to produce, but it doesn't have a lot of meaning, and it actually might not sound like any words you've ever heard before. It can be very fluent, very fluid, but really have no content to it at all.
So something that we might call word salad.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Is this now, obviously, with all of those different ways that aphasia can express itself, there are different levels of difficulty that people experience. But is it something that tends to get better with help?
Yes. Fortunately, for most people, there's going to be a period of spontaneous recovery where you see a really rapid improvement in generally all abilities. And research has shown that when we're able to get in there, all of the therapies, speech language pathologists, as well as occupational therapists and physical therapists doing their aspects of it, that the patient can improve even further. But once that spontaneous recovery kind of slows down, people can continue to recover quite honestly for the rest of their lives.
So what made you think that an app might be something that would help with recovery?
Regardless of the type of aphasia somebody has or the level of severity, naming proves to be really an issue across everybody.
All right, and when you say naming, you're talking about coming up with the right word for different nouns.
Exactly, basically. Yeah. There are certainly verbs can be worked on, but nouns tend to be the easiest thing. So we show them different objects. Can they say that? What else can they show us or tell us what they do with it? And so targeting that ability to name items and talk about them, always a big problem. And we've done it for years and years and years, but much of what we've done has still been typically in the format of the old paper pencil tasks. And so when Dr. Hughes and I met at a campus event a couple of years ago, something called Campus Connexus, which really tries to put researchers who might be wanting to collaborate together, the idea was really born of, hey, why don't we take this well-studied, researched approach called semantic feature analysis, and let's see if we can bring it into the digital age.
So, Stephen, when the two of you started working together, how did you come up with the concept that you would turn into this app?
Well, really, it's a matter of studying the way that they are already doing their therapy. As Angie said, the process, semantic feature analysis, is a well-established technique. And we were just trying to understand how that could be translated into an electronic format, how we can capture that interaction that takes place between the therapist and the patient and replicate that using the technology.
So if I downloaded this app and you can put it on your iPhone or your iPad, it's also available for an Android as well?
Yes, it is.
All right.
Both platforms.
So if I downloaded this app and I opened it up, what would I see?
Well, it starts off with a set of images. We work in blocks of five, and there's lots of categories of images that we're choosing from, ranging from animals to food to common household items. And we first ask them a question about the object that they see. We say, what do you associate with this? Or where do you find this? And we're trying to get the patient to verbalize some connections that they may have with that object. And then after they've done that, they can press a button and the app asks them to name the item. It says, what is this? At that point, the person is supposed to be able to attempt to give the item a name. If they can't, there are some additional prompts. We give them.
And are they giving the item a name verbally?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so the app is not actually attempting to evaluate them or grade them in any way. The idea is that the app gets them practice with verbalization, with speaking.
All right. And so is this something they can do by themselves, or do they need someone else with them to hear the results?
That really depends on the individual. I'll let Angie talk about that maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, well, first of all, what was great in meeting Stephen is he wanted to add to what speech therapists do as opposed to replace us. So this was a great collaboration from the start. And what happens is people might only be in speech therapy for a couple of weeks and they only see us one time a day. But there's plenty more hours that they can use to practice. So this is really, it can be used in therapy or it can be used outside of therapy. As Stephen said, it's not really judging or grading. So, you know, it's that idea that practice is still going to be better than no practice, even if it's not entirely accurate.
Okay. Now, as a therapist, would you use this app then in conjunction with, is this something that you would prescribe to a patient?
Sure, definitely. And in fact, that's what we're hearing, that people are saying, okay, when you're discharged from the hospital or later today when all of your therapies are done, I want you to use this app. And as Stephen said, we do them in blocks of five and then there's another review session. So, you know, they don't have to spend a great deal of time on it, but they can spend however much time they want and get that practice in.
When was the app released?
In late October.
Okay, so it's been out there for a while. Have you gotten feedback from therapists who are using this with their patients?
We have been hearing from people, particularly around this area, who are excited to use it. And then certainly our students at the University of Northern Iowa, when they go out and do their internships, they're bringing it out and other people are learning about it. And we're hearing some favorable feedback, which is great.
So give me an example of some of the favorable feedback. Has anybody told you a story about it?
Well, you know, what we've been hearing is that it's pretty user-friendly because some of the folks who have strokes might not be as savvy with some of the technology yet, but they're able to manage it on their own. So, they can go home, they can do this on their own time. Therapists feel like, hey, I want to tell them about this because it has good literature, good research to back it up.
Is there any concern that with something like this available, there might be an argument for insurance companies not necessarily to cover the kind of treatment that patients are getting now, saying, oh, you could do this at home with your app?
Not so far, because generally what's going on in the session, there's so much more to cover than just that there's plenty to do and usually not enough time to do it. So this can be a way to get at that in a relatively user-friendly format.
And again, the way the app is designed, it's meant to be a supplement to the therapy that's taking place in session. We absolutely did not seek to replace therapists at all with this app, because so much of what happens is an interaction, a dynamic that takes place between the patient and the therapist. We're trying to extend that outside of their sessions.
I'm curious if you've heard of patients whose family members are using this with them. I mean, it seems like something that if you just had someone with you, a loving, supportive person with you who does not have aphasia, that they could really help a patient with this process. Angie?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you know, and that's what we really find ourselves doing is as clinicians, is really tapping into the family members to really, in essence, act like therapists, especially once people are discharged and may not be able to continue with their therapy. And so they are an important part of this, exactly. And so teaching them about the app is crucial.
And the role of semantic feature analysis is to kind of build up that network of related concepts to the item. And while the app does not grade or judge them, having another person working with you who can encourage you and prod you on to elaborate on those would be very helpful.
How long did it take to develop this?
About 2 years.
That's a good question. We started on a much larger clinical version to be used in sessions. About last May, I think, we made a decision to go more with this at-home version and release that version first. So there was quite a bit going on in the development process over 2 years, kind of understanding each other and understanding how the technology can support this. But the app itself, from start to finish for the at-home version, probably started in May and went through October then at the release date.
How many students were you able to involve in this process?
We've had six, I think.
Yeah.
One computer scientist did a summer work with us, and then we've had five other speech therapist students who have been engaged.
So as the manager of the Apps Lab, Steve, have you been bringing together computer scientists with people of a number of different disciplines?
Yes, that's the point of the Apps Lab, is what we're trying to do is recognize that app technology is something that is somewhat accessible. It is reasonably capable for an individual to learn how to do some app development. And if they don't, then we can also support them with some students who are hired in-house and can develop for them to support some of the app ideas that they may have.
So once an app is developed and released, what kind of feedback can you get from usage of the app? What kind of metrics can you see?
Well, we can see where people are downloading, the location where people are downloading from. We can get, I guess, a sense of whether they're in the United States or abroad. And we have had a reasonable amount of international support for this app as well. We also rely heavily on the feedback tools that people leave, the rating system, to provide evaluation. And whenever you release an app, you also have to provide contact information. And so we have received several direct emails from patients. One group was asking, for example, when we were going to release a Spanish version of this app.
Well, I was just going to ask you that. You mentioned international use. I guess if you're saying the word out loud, it doesn't really matter what language you're speaking. I mean, you're practicing whatever language you're comfortable with. So how would a Spanish version of the app be different?
Well, when they go through the system, they go through the prompts, it does prompt them with the first letter, and it does provide a audio version of the actual full word. And so the word wouldn't match up necessarily. But again, as we recommended to this individual who was contacting us, if they want to just turn the volume down on their phone, they can still work with a caregiver to help them speak in their native language.
Do you think that you will try to bring out a version in different languages?
I think the Spanish version would be great. And in our clinic, the Roy Eblen Speech and Hearing Clinic, you know, when we have evaluated native Spanish speakers, what we've really found is the tests that have been designed obviously really sometimes fall short of the different cultural and linguistic diversity. So, for example, asking people to name a trellis or a wreath for somebody who's from Colombia, where maybe they don't have those, that's not, you know, they might not know the name of it to begin with.
Right.
So we definitely would have to look at all of the pictured items and make sure that they would be appropriate. But we've got a good start on it, and I think it would be a wonderful addition.
Is this the first app you've been involved with developing, Angela?
Yes, definitely.
So having gone through this process and seen how the app is being used by people, getting some of those anecdotal stories back, does it give you ideas for other apps you might want to develop in the future?
Oh, we've been pretty much working nonstop on other apps. It's definitely a slow, time-consuming process. We probably have more ideas than time to do it, but that's what's been so great. And so we're looking to hopefully release our next one over the summer. And we just, you know, we keep adding to our list of many of them. And it certainly gives me a really greater appreciation for the apps that are out there. Even the most simplistic one definitely can take time to put together.
And can you give me a preview of what the next one's about?
You bet. So instead of building connections via meaning, what do you do with this? Where do you find it? We're building those connections and including those cues that are more sound-based. So if you show a picture of an apple, what words rhyme with this? What sound does it start with? How many syllables are there? And again, another really strongly supported approach in the literature base. So that's the one that we've been working on now.
Stephen, how long have you been producing apps at the Apps Lab at UNI?
The Apps Lab is a new program this year, actually. This was the first year for the Apps Lab. Prior to that, I was in the computer science department here at UNI and was doing that as sort of as a side thing for my research.
And how many apps have come out of the last year of work?
On the market right now, there are two faculty-supported ones, and I have had a student who's produced two other ones. And we've got about five others that are on the cusp.
All right. And I can imagine that there have been a lot of new ideas percolating with the release of the first few. Do you find that the ideas just kind of become exponential?
Yes.
So can you tell me about a project that you're working on that you're most excited about?
Well, honestly, I mean, this project here has been really wonderful. This is kind of the flagship one for Apps Lab. And if you just look at all the techniques that that speech therapists use in their tool belt, so to speak, we can look at saying which one of those actually will translate nicely into a technological solution, bringing it into the digital age, as Angie said earlier. And there's a lot of them. You know, I think we could support Apps Lab strictly on this project alone for the next couple of years with everything there's going on. But you know, there's lots of other things we can do as well. The next one that's going to be released is a support tool for students who are going abroad, a way that they can find emergency information, contact information when they're traveling. You know, they can't just dial 911 because it's different from country to country. So based on their current location, we can route them to the proper emergency contact information and consulate information, and also contacts back to you and I if they get in trouble when they're traveling. It's one of these apps that we hope they never use, but it's nice to have on your
right,
install on your phone.
Absolutely. Well, Stephen Hughes, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Stephen Hughes is manager of the Apps Lab at the University of Northern Iowa's John Papajohn Entrepreneurial Center, a fairly new endeavor at the University of Northern Iowa. And it sounds like we're going to hear a lot coming out of the Apps Lab in the next few years. And Angela Berta, thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure for being on here today, Charity.
Angela Berta is professor in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders. We've been talking about the app Name That for patients with aphasia. With me in the studio right now is River to River host Ben Kiefer. What's coming up on the show today, Ben?
Hi, Charity. It's Politics Day. Politics Wednesday will take us abroad today. We'll talk about the international uproar over the fate of hundreds of Nigerian schoolgirls abducted by Islamist militants, also the situation in Sudan, and of course, Ukraine. An update there, analysis from Jim McCormick and William Reisinger, political scientists.
All right, River to River today at noon. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.